All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is a Q&A episode, the first one we've had in a while, where I will be answering listener questions.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon fan sites on the internet and also the host of this podcast. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans. All right, today we are doing a Q&A episode, where first one that we've done since, like, what, mid-February? And so basically people sent in questions. I will answer those questions. We'll try to keep it under 30 minutes, as we often do. Any questions that we do not hit on this episode will become part of a leftover mailbag that I will not promise, but I will promise, but not possibly keep that promise, work on to publish later this weekend. Most of these questions came to me on Twitter at FalcFans. People sent them to both FalcFans, my personal Twitter handle, as well as Locked On Falcons, the show's Twitter handle, where I know if you send a tweet to that handle, it is a podcast related question. Also, there's other ways that you can send in your questions if you want to get in on that leftover mailbag, because you didn't send them in by the time you're listening to this, but there still is time to get them in so that you can get them answered on LockedOnFalcons.com later this weekend. And you can do so either on Twitter, you can do it on Facebook, Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page, you can do it email, LockedOnFalcons@mail.com is the email address, and of course you can leave a comment at LockedOnFalcons.com or FalcFans.com, where this podcast is posted daily. So let's get into it, guys. All right, first question comes from Young Zach at Young Zach on Twitter. Do you think DQ will actually take a D tackle over a pass rusher with the Falcons' first pick? Yes, but why are you differentiating between a D tackle and the pass rusher? They both rush the quarterback. I'm assuming that when you say pass rusher, you mean an edge rusher, a guy that plays defensive end. I don't understand why there's a push for the Falcons to use a high pick on a defensive end. I know we lost Adrian Claiborne, but people do realize that if Adrian Claiborne had been re-signed, he would have spent probably 70% or more of his snaps playing D-tackle in the nickel. That's really where the Falcons need at the pass rush is. When it's your nickel pass rush where you're going to be playing, you know, 65 to 70% of your snaps, and you already have Vic Beasley and Dak McKinley at the end spots, and you have Grady Jarrett on the inside, you need that other guy to fill in on the inside, which was Don Terry Poe last year. But your Adrian Claiborne replacement is essentially Dak McKinley, guys. It's one of the, you know, so I don't understand why people feel that compelled that the Falcons need to use a high pick on a defensive end. I think some of it has to do with people looking at the Eagles' success with all their pass rushers and thinking that's the way to do it, just throw first round picks at it, not really understanding how successful teams build pass rushes. It's a lot of it is being able to find quality players with middle round picks. A lot of it is dabbling in free agency. Like, it's not just let's just throw a whole bunch of first round picks and let's get it. Because if you threw a first or second round pick at a defensive end, if he's on the field, if he's playing defensive end in nickel 67% of the time, that means Dak McKinley's on the bench or Vic Beasley's on the bench. So if you use a first-round pick, you're negating another first-round pick. Now, if you're drafting a guy that can dabble as a base defensive end and then kick inside and play nickel pass rush, okay, but that's not really an edge rusher because, again, primarily when he's rushing the quarterback, he's playing on the inside. So this whole the Falcons need to draft a number three defensive end is kind of ridiculous. Like, why are you going to use a premium pick on a player that essentially replaces Brooks Reed, who only plays 30 to 40% of the snaps, you know, in base defense? Like, what's the value in that? That makes no sense. But, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of this stuff comes from people not really understanding how value works. And, you know, not to be overly condescending on the first question to you, Zach, or anybody else listening, but it's one of those things where it's just like it baffles me sort of how hard it is for people to contemplate value. I mean, like, when you build a defense and when you build, particularly when you build a defensive front, and this is the thing that people are missing with the Eagles front, is they have six guys that rush the quarterback, but none of those guys do the same thing. And, you know, like, you don't go out and get, you know, everybody's like, oh, you can never have too many pass rushers. Yeah, you can. If you, you know, you only have two edge rushers and two interior guys. So if you have a third edge rusher, he's not playing, right? You know, like, I know you need to have a rotation, you need to have, but you don't go out and use first round picks and second round picks on rotational players, do you? You want impact Pro Bowlers. You know, like, I don't know. Sorry for being condescending. Let's move on to the next question. All right. At Falcoholic Matt, Bargain Free Agency Holic on Twitter. Where does Sanu fit in the depth chart after the Falcons trade for Odell Beckham? Probably as the backup quarterback until we decide not to pay Matt Ryan, and then he becomes a starter in 2019. Next question, Tribe Called Mac asks, of all the realistic options, who would be your preference for the first round? Maurice Hurst? Via the Falcons ass. Pre-draft depth chart question, Jack Crawford, pure nickel tackle or occasional base end as well? I would have said possibly a base end until we signed Shelby. It seemed like the Falcons were potentially going to dabble with that. That was a possibility if they didn't get Shelby or a guy in the draft. But it does seem like we'll probably see Crawford spent the bulk of his time playing nickel defensive tackle, assuming everybody stays healthy. But, you know, he can be that sort of emergency guy as the backup to Derek Shelby. And we'll see if he gets those opportunities this summer. Spencer Williams at Jevic7026 asks, how much do the D tackles fall off after Deron Payne? I know Vita Vea is one, but is there a big gap to you between those two and the rest? No, if I was ordering the D tackles, I think it's Maurice Hurst one. Then there's a big drop off to the next guy. Then it's Vita Vea. Then there's another big drop off to the next guy. Then it's Taven Bryan. Then it's Deron Payne. Then there's probably another smaller drop off. And then it's probably Harrison Phillips. That's my fifth. I don't get why people think Deron Payne is number one. I mean, I probably get it. I think it's probably due to people really overemphasizing that last game in the national title game against Georgia and or an SEC bias. But other than, you know, outside of that one game and assuming that all SEC players are automatically superior to other players, there's not a real reason to think Deron Payne is the best D-tackle. You know, if you wanted to say he's the second best or third best, I wouldn't have a problem with that. But he's definitely not one. And it's certainly not close. Like, Maurice Hurst is much – like, I'm not even the world's biggest fan of Maurice Hurst. I think he's a very good player. I don't think he's this elite D-tackle prospect that other people seem to think of. Like, if I was going back over the last five or six drafts and sort of ranking D-tackle prospects, I would probably put Hurst probably, like, five at most, maybe six or seven, behind guys like Aaron Donald and DeForest Buckner and Leonard Williams and even Dominique Easley. But I think he's much better than Deron Payne. Shedrick Carter at Shedrick Carter 2 asks, haven't heard or read anything that Atlanta is working out or visiting any of the top prospects. Who do you think they like? I'm going to be putting up an interest tracker very soon on FileFans.com, so stay tuned. I'll try to get that up this weekend or at least by Monday. So definitely check that out, and that's going to be able to keep track on all the pro days they go to, all the players that they have workouts with, all the players they've shown interest in, all their combine interviews. I do that every year. And last year, I think I put it up like the week before the draft. I'll try to get it up at least by April 1st this year, or not April 1st, but April 2nd or whatever that Monday is. Steven Atohi asks, over under 5% chance we trade for Odell Beckham. Probably in all seriousness, under. It's a 0% chance. So, you know, I know people had a lot of fun with that Ringer article. I hope people didn't really think that was a serious, oh, the Falcons are interested in Odell Beckham or the Falcons might trade for Odell Beckham. It was, hey, Ringer NFL writers, where do you want Odell Beckham to get traded to and someone picked the Falcons? Right? It's more of a fantasy exercise than necessarily connecting strings. Before we move on to the next question, I want to remind you guys to check out Locked On NFL Draft podcast with host John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Steven, next question is, who are the top five players on your Falcons big board, regardless of position, that we could reasonably target at 26? Well, Steven, I don't really have a top five. I mean, over the years, I try not to get overly invested in who the Falcons should or whatever you want to call it should take. You know, I don't really worry about that until after they draft the guys. I think I've told this story before, but back in 2011, I scouted like 300 some odd players for that draft. And I had this massive like 75 player top board where I ranked some of the top guys in that draft class and put it up on FalFans.com. And then the Falcons traded up in that draft and took five of those guys. So I put in like probably like 600 hours, something ridiculous amount of hours of work. And it did not pay off in any major way. I mean, it made me very informed about that 2011 draft class. But in terms of direct, in terms of the, you know, the team that I love and enjoy, it had zero payoff whatsoever. And after that, I just sort of like, I'll just wait until after the draft to see who the Falcons take rather than getting overly invested pre-draft. Because, you know, I've done this for a long time. I've been evaluating prospects since 2001. You can go to FalFans.com and find my awful, awful scouting report where I just basically watched the bowl games that year. And it's like, here's my thoughts on these guys. You know, and that's exactly how I sounded 17 years ago. And like the thing I've learned over the years, I can probably count on one hand in that entire span, in almost two decades of doing this, how many first round picks I was like, yes, the Falcons drafted the guy that I wanted them to draft, or one of the guys that I wanted them to draft. It's Vic, D'Angelo Hall, even though I really wanted Will Smith in that year, Matt Ryan, Spoon, but again, I really wanted Derek Morgan. You can probably sense a theme beginning to develop here. I really liked Julio as a player. He was my favorite wide receiver in that draft class, but was not a fan of the trade. I liked Jake Matthews' pick, but I really wanted Khalil Mack in that draft. Again, theme. And then, you probably know the story. The past 2 years, we drafted Keanu, who I liked, but I didn't necessarily want as a first-round pick. I thought he was going to be a second-round pick. I really wanted Miles Jack in the first round. And then we took Tack last year, and I thought they were really going to take Forrest Lamp, and he was the guy that I really wanted them to take. You know, the lesson is don't get over, you know, at least the lesson I've learned is don't get overly invested in a handful of guys, because there's like a 97% chance they're not going to take that guy with their first round pick. And that's like not really an exaggeration when you factor in, you know, 1 in 32 chance, I guess. I care about the Falcons, who they draft, but at the same time, I kind of don't, at least not in the ways that other people do. Like, I don't whittle it down to, like, I really hope the Falcons take these three or four. Like, whatever, man. You know, like, it's just like, the thing I've learned over the years is, like, it's going to take 3 to 5 years for us to know if these guys are good anymore. So getting invested in, you know, 3 to 5 guys or whatever it is, just so I can be excited or disappointed on draft day, kind of makes no sense to me. It's just kind of a waste of energy. Generally speaking, when it comes to the Falcons first round pick, I'm like, whatever, man, you know, who cares? You know, like, I've been disappointed way more than I've been excited. And generally speaking, when it comes to like their middle and late round picks, I'm like, oh yeah, he's a guy, he exists. Like, it's very rare for me to get excited about a Falcons pick, just because I know, like, you know, not like we're not going to know anything about any of these guys until like 3 years later. So I don't know. If I sound like too much of a curmudgeon this episode, I apologize. But I don't know. I don't have a top five big board. I probably won't have a top five big board. If you ask me, again, I already ranked the D tackles in the order that I would probably look at taking them. But in terms of that's my final five, or you know, it's two or three of those guys and two or three other people, I'm not going to have that. That's just not going to be me. You know, if other people have that, more power to them, but I just think they're setting themselves up for disappointment for really no reason other than to, I don't know, like, so they can complain 2 years later, like, oh man, I wish the Falcons would have taken this guy that I said that they should have taken, when 95% of the time, whoever the Falcons take turns out to be just fine. And like, they never say that, you know, so I don't get it. But all right, guys, I just want to let you know that baseball season is here, and we have Locked On MLB Podcast Network, now part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Check out all the shows: Locked On MLB, Locked On Yankees, Locked On Orioles, and much, much more. Now your Major League Baseball team every day. Jason at Jason ATL 153 asks, how long is our window of winning a Super Bowl before the next rebuild. Hashtag gotta win now. Well, if you listen to Monday's episode where we had Marco, a.k.a. Vienna Falcons, on, basically our window is over. If you buy into the research of that, I would definitely suggest going back and listening to Monday's most recent episode with Marco to get full context. If you don't know what I'm talking about, again, I would definitely recommend pausing this episode, going back, downloading or streaming or whatever that episode, and then coming back and finishing this episode, because I do think that's a very interesting thing. You don't necessarily need to know that to finish this episode, but like, definitely if you didn't listen to Monday's episode, definitely check it out, because it's a definitely worthwhile listen with all the interesting data and research that Marco put into it about, you know, the NFC playoff picture and sort of teams' Super Bowl windows and whatnot. Now, that being said, if you really paid attention to it, even if the NFC South's run is over in terms of their dominance of the NFC after this past season, it doesn't mean that the Falcons can't, or any team from the NFC South can't win, because as we discussed, you know, it's usually only during those 3-year windows, it's only usually one team from that division that wins the Super Bowl in that 3-year run. So there's 2 years in that run where another team from another division can generally has a very good shot at winning a Super Bowl, or at least going to a Super Bowl. Let's say that, you know, the AFC has something to do with that. Stinking Patriots. So yeah, like the Falcons window, answer this question, honestly, the Falcons window is basically probably going to be as open as long as Matt Ryan is here. And at this point in time, there's no reason to think Matt Ryan won't play another 5 to 7 years in Atlanta. So that's to answer your question, Jason, 5 to 7 years. We'll see. Stephen Bounds, as Stephen Bounds on Twitter, do you think there's any realistic scenario in which the Falcons choose a wide receiver early as Kuiper projected? It feels like the need at wide receiver is being a little understated by Falcons Nation. No, I don't think there's a realistic scenario, at least as far as a round one wide receiver is concerned. I think there's a pretty decent chance that the Falcons might take a wide receiver in round two, but at pick 26, I would be completely shocked. Now, I would say that there's a better chance of the Falcons taking a wide receiver at 26 than there is, say, taking a guard or a defensive end or a linebacker. So, it's up there on the hierarchy if you're ranking positions. But I don't think it's really in play. It shouldn't be in play, at least as far as I'm concerned. I this is not really a 3-wide receiver offense. This is a 2-wide receiver offense by and large. And I think the only way it makes sense to justify a really high pick on a wide receiver, in this case, we're talking first round, is if the Falcons, you know, honestly, if I'm being honest, I think it's basically, if they're going to use a number one pick on a wide receiver, they need to shop Sanu immediately after that. And if he's not traded by trade deadline, then I don't know what they're doing. But, basically more realistic, you know, the less extreme reaction is that they're fully intending on cutting Mohamed Sanu next year. Like, this is Mohamed Sanu's last year, and the only reason he's still on the roster is because they need a bridge wide receiver, because rookie wide receivers typically are notoriously not good, and so therefore they need time to develop, and blowing up your wide receiver position for a rookie wide receiver probably doesn't make a ton of sense. But the point is, like, this team is not a 3-wide receiver offense. And this offensive identity is not built around throwing the football or its wide receiver core. And, you know, this is one of those things where it's like, you go back through history, and this is why, like, even though the idea of trading for Odell Beckham is sexy and appealing to a lot of people, people do have to understand to a certain extent that, like, building your offense around 2 peak wide receivers is not a really strong way of building your team. Because again, I think I've gone in these wide receiver rants enough times in the past that I won't rehash it, but like, wide receivers are sort of like the end result of everything. Has to go right for a wide receiver to really affect the play. Like, you got to go through like 2 or 3 steps for a wide receiver to impact the play, you know, offensive line, quarterback, all that types of stuff. And then the wide receiver comes into the equation. And the problem is with football is, things don't usually go right, you know, like, things go awry. And like football kind of at its core is a physical game where you have to overcome adversity every single play. And it's one of those things that when you build your team around wide receivers, you're not going to be able to respond well to adversity because the core, you need the core of your team to be a quarterback. You need it to be your offensive line. You need it to be a defense. And then under that, probably the running game is a much more, at least it's a much more stable force for your offense than necessarily your passing game, even though your passing game is certainly more effective, but you can build a firmer foundation with a strong running game. The problem is if you put all this money in your wide receivers, then you need to make sure you keep your quarterback upright, and you need an offensive line that's really great at passing pass protection, because if you're going to make two wide receivers the core of your offense, you probably need to throw the ball 60 to 70% of the time, which historically is not a great way of building successful teams. But getting back to this year's class, I don't want to go too much of a side rant, but I haven't done all my homework on this year's wide receiver class. I would say I think a lot of it is, you know, you talk about Falcons Nation. I think a lot of it is people extremely underrate Justin Hardy. And I think there's reasons for that, which I won't go into now, but I think there's this false assumption that if the Falcons draft a wide receiver, that guy's going to come in immediately and be the number three wide receiver and take over Taylor Gabriel's spot. When in reality, Justin Hardy's pretty much got that spot locked down, and any wide receiver they draft is probably going to be taking over the Justin Hardy spot as the fourth guy. I know that's hard to believe for some people to understand that, but I think that's a lot of that has to do with, again, underestimating where Hardy is in his development. You know, it's very similar to the whole Brian Hill thing, and people just assuming, oh yeah, Teron Ward has no shot at winning a roster spot, where I kept insisting to folks after the draft, like, I think there's a very good chance that Teron Ward's going to make the team, because the things that rookie running backs typically are bad at are the things that Teron Ward is good at. And those things are things that you value in backup players as opposed to, you know, developmental guys. And so it's one of those things where, like, I do think you could probably – I haven't done all the homework on this wide receiver class yet. I'll try to wrap that up in the next week or so. But you could say Calvin Ridley's probably the one guy so far that I've seen that I would say probably is talented enough to immediately come in and be the number three receiver. But outside of him, I haven't really seen anybody that I think, oh yeah, that guy's so talented. There's no way that you can keep him. You have to put him on the field as soon as possible. I think there are guys that will play certainly as rookies, but I don't think they're going to be like these guys that are going to play 500, 600 snaps like you would expect in this offense right away. So again, that's one of the reasons why I don't think a first round pick is very plausible. Maybe a second round pick, you can justify it then. Certainly a third or fourth round pick. But before that, no, I don't think so. Steven asks, what do you think of Leon McFadden's strengths, weaknesses, and chance to make the team? I'll be honest with you. Leon McFadden's probably the one player on the roster that I have the least firm grip on what he is. I didn't really watch a whole lot of him when we signed him because I was like, he's probably not going to play. And if he does play, then I'll know what he is. And so I don't really need to go back and dig through, you know, old Cowboys or old Browns film to try to figure out who he is. So I don't know. I honestly don't have a strong assessment of Leon McFadden. Do I think he'll make, I think his chances of making the team are low. Certainly below 50%, probably well below 50%. Particularly if the Falcons draft a cornerback, at some point in this draft. Right now, I would probably pencil him in as the CB6 with not at best a coin flip possibility that the Falcons keep six cornerbacks. I don't think they will at this point in time unless they draft a guy. So I would say he's probably on the outside looking in, but you never know. I mean, the good thing that Leon McFadden can say is he's good on special teams. So that's that will be an opportunity for him to make the roster. Okay, our last question is coming from Young Zach. Why haven't the Falcons addressed fullback? Do you think they will draft a fullback, that fullback / tight end / all-purpose player? I forgot his name. I'm assuming you're talking about Jalen Samuels. Maybe you're talking about Dimitri Flowers. I'm a big fan of Samuels. I don't expect the Falcons to take him. I think, you know, my concern, I like Samuels a lot. I don't really love him in Atlanta because I think in order for Samuels to be effective, you kind of have to have a good offensive coordinator, and that remains to be seen. You know, you got to have a plan for him. Dimitri Flowers is a player I don't like as nearly as much as everybody else does. I think he's certainly more than capable of being a functional NFL player, but this high-level starting fullback that I think other people, like, I don't see it, but I wouldn't be the first time I've been wrong about a player. Like, I remember when Ovie Mahaley came out, I wasn't a huge fan of Ovie's game at Wake Forest, but then again, that was back during a time where I was, like, watching, like, two games, you know, a bowl game and not much else. So maybe I misjudged Ovie, or certainly I did misjudge Ovie. I thought he was a good player. I just didn't see him becoming the player that he wound up becoming. You know, the greatness. So, you know, I could be completely wrong about Flowers, but he's kind of just a guy to me. If I was betting the Falcons drafting a fullback, I would probably say someone like Nick Baldwin out of San Diego State. He was a former quarterback that moved to fullback and has been very productive in that role the last couple of years, blocking for Rashard Penny and Donnell Pumphrey. And the Falcons have shown a very strong affinity for some San Diego State prospects in recent years. So I'm pretty sure they're fully aware of Nick Baldwin and his skill set. So he would be the guy that I would bet, if I was betting at this point, the Falcons might take if they draft a guy. But we'll see. You know, there's a chance that they bring back a guy like Derek Coleman between now and the draft. I'm a little surprised that they haven't done so at this point, but maybe they'll do so in the next week or two, and bring him back on a minimum deal. Who knows? We'll see. Okay. Well, guys, that's it. I appreciate you guys tuning in. And any questions that I did not answer, I'm looking at you, Justin. I did get your email. I will get to those questions on LockedOnFalcons.com. And if you are listening to this episode and you didn't get your question answered, there's a very good chance that it will be answered on LockedOnFalcons.com later this weekend. Or if you haven't sent in your question, by all means, do so as soon as possible so you make sure that I will answer it on LockedOnFalcons.com. Okay, guys, that's it. I appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll be back on Monday to talk about probably the draft. Maybe some Falcon news will break over the weekend, but we'll start gearing up. I think probably start looking, focusing more on sort of the trajectory of the Falcons with the draft, as opposed to dialing deep into some of these position groups and players and prospects and whatnot. We'll save that for a little closer, a little deeper in April. But until then, you guys stay locked on and have a good weekend. Happy Easter. Good Friday. Happy Good Friday. Happy Holy Sunday. Saturday, I'm sorry. I'm bad at this. All right. Later, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.